Welcome, everybody, to another edition of the Gwyntelligence Podcast. On the road this time in Washington, D.C., joined not as always, but luckily for the second time on this podcast, no, third time on this podcast, yeah. John Conniff from Mad Friars.
Here to go against all the anti-prospect smack that you're so well known for.
Is it smack or is it realism? Do you not like realism?
I want to live in the fantasy land, so I'll say smack.
So, I mean, this is your time to shine, right? Spring training where hopes are alive, prospects are playing every game, stats definitely matter.
Well, I mean, honestly, we go out to spring training. It's probably our least favorite trip. It's because it costs the most. You know, AC and Lynn and, you know, are out there with AJ Cassaville, and they have to write about prospects. Got nothing else to do, so we don't quite have the whole forum all to ourselves. We have a much better time when we go out to the affiliates, and it's only us there. And by that time, you know, all three of those guys have long forgotten about anybody on any prospects.
What's the value for you to go to spring training?
We try to see all the guys at one point. We have to kind of do something. We'll give us an idea about where all the different guys are going. We try to go, you know, we're probably not going to do a whole lot of stories on Jackson Merrill. David Jay's going out there this coming week. I'll be out there the next. Probably be on guys like Dylan Head, some of the guys that aren't on the major league roster. We'll be on the backfields. We keep Jay away from people, so it's good that way. Yeah.
Is he going to tweet stuff about how the glove was really popping?
He'll talk about how the ball just sounded different off the bat. Yeah.
Classic. Yeah. Classic.
Something really original.
Classic journalism.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's David.
So when you travel out here, do you ever travel with Mark Wilkins?
Yeah, I have traveled with Mark Wilkins twice.
Do you guys share a room?
Have to share a room, yeah.
Is it disruptive early in the morning when he has to get up and start folding his phallus to fit into his underwear? Because I'm sure you're aware you shared a room with him. He's a gigantic man.
He's a big man, but I usually go out to work out in the morning, and Mark has a much more interesting social life than I do. So Mark's usually been out to bars or something like that. So by the time Mark wakes up, you know, I'm long gone out of the room. But Mark's a really good guy to travel with. Good interviewer. He wrote some nice stories in San Antonio for us. Always does a good job in the daily.
I mean, I've heard he has to roll it up like a bubble tape.
Yeah, you know, I don't look at it because it'd just be too tempting.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's why. So I kind of stay away from that.
It's just interesting. Yeah, I have a lot of questions on Mark Wilkins's dong. But we can get to him as we go, you know, through this conversation.
Ask Mark. I mean, I'm sure Mark could help you out there. Yeah, he's a good dude.
Yeah. Is it awkward when he brings ladies back to the room?
He hasn't quite hit that yet. Hmm. Yeah. Yeah, someday. And I think Mark would just be really nice. He'd just look at me and goes, I got someone here. Get the fuck out, Conniff. So yeah. It'd be nice.
He uses the restroom, I think, at the bar, right?
Usually, I think.
Actually, I don't think he drinks.
I think my wife, when I told him how tall Mark was, she asked if they had a nuclear reactor in the bathroom to service both of us. My wife's really, really a polite, nice person in that way, too.
Did you point out to her that he's proportional, or is this something you've kept to yourself?
She's my age. She doesn't really give a shit about that anymore. Okay. She's mainly just happy I'm the fuck out of the house. So, yeah.
What do you make of the concerted effort of Padres media to publicize Jackson Merrill this spring?
You know,
I know that you were a fan.
Yes.
I know personally that you've dined with Jackson Merrill and his parents.
No, I haven't. I have not dined with Jackson Merrill. I've dined with his agents.
Okay.
Yeah, his agents I'm buddies with. The Merrills I know a little bit about. And I've talked to Merrill when he first got drafted out of Severna Park. I actually wrote a story in the Severna Park Voice, which paid me a handsome fee, and Jay actually got money for being a photographer there.
No, nice.
Jerry Espinoza, who does great photos of us. We really like to have him in spring training. He got some there. I've written about him for Mad Friars a couple times, but I haven't dined with him yet. He's actually grown quite a bit, too.
Well, have you seen a concerted front like there's been this spring in publicizing? Because I'm just being straight up here.
Sure.
Let's say this was 6 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Even 4 weeks ago, the discussion was the Padres wouldn't do something that reckless. Like they're not going to start Jackson Merrill. They're going to sign someone. They're going to trade for someone. Don't worry about it. They would not be that dumb. And then it quickly turned into this concerted effort from Padres Media, whoever it is, Kevin Acey, 97.3, AJ Caspel, all the names that we all know, right? Have had this united front on Jackson Merrill is more than you think. He posted today a picture of him prior to a game rallying the troops, right? I don't know if you saw that video. It's a little uncomfortable. For me, it was a little uncomfortable. I'm sure Manny isn't like, hell yeah, let's get pumped for this spring game, right?
It was a great video by Robert Escalante. I'm going to be a little promo that he does photos for us in Lake Elsinore, too. It's a great kid. As far as him being ready, no, I don't think he is. And, you know, when it first became aware of it, I think it's when our good mutual friend Eric said it to me, and I told him I think I said something polite, like he was a fat idiot, that's not really going to happen. The Padres aren't going to promote him. And I think he said, old man, I've taken your Social Security check twice. I can do it a third time. And so we bet on that with three other people, Marcy, Pauly, and Salas, whether they would make the opening day roster. And so far, three out of the four, Sitch won four, because that's the bet. When I go to San Diego, I got to take him and his little friend Danny Ortiz out to eat for a big Sichuan feast. But as far as your question about is there a concerted front, I think it's a lot like how it was with C.J. Abrams a couple years ago. I mean, Merrill's had, I think, about 40 games at San Antonio. He hasn't really had enough. If you see him up there now this year, he's gonna probably be able to make plays in outfield. He'll get the bat on the ball. He's not going to really be prepared for a lot of the breaking stuff you're going to see in the major leagues.
Well, and let's be frank. He didn't tear it up at San Antonio.
He did okay, but he didn't do great. Yeah, I agree with you on that.
C.J. Abrams also didn't tear it up.
Right.
In fact, above rookie ball, C.J. Abrams never really tore it up. He was slightly above average. But to justify the hype, or at the time, before the Soto trade, the talk around Abrams was, you cannot trade him. He's untouchable. But when you looked at his stat line, and I know one of the mantras of Mad Friars is don't scout the stat line.
I'm not a huge fan of that line, because I think that's kind of something like people like me would say to you, because I went and saw someone. It'd be like if you're saying, well, Merrill didn't really tear it up. He did okay for his age, but that's a factual statement.
Sure.
He didn't tear it up. You're right. And I don't care how much I tell you how pretty his swing looked, or he just has that different sound off his bat. You know, it's bullshit. I mean, the thing is, what I'm worried about, since we're both Padre fans, is, one, they're not going to extend Kim. I'd like to see Merrill have at least a half a year in Double-A. Probably there, as opposed to El Paso, where the ball flies out a lot more. You know, get a little bit better defensively at shortstop. Get more used to seeing breaking stuff and speed and all that, which you're used to. And so he can step in and be the everyday shortstop. Right now, I mean, you're promoting someone just because you have a need, and that's not how you really do development, in my opinion.
Does he need to elevate the ball more?
Yeah.
Because the main thing with him is the power's iffy, right? He had a flash of power at high A.
Mm-hmm.
The power wasn't there to the same level at Double A in those 40 games.
And yeah, this I was okay
spring,
with that.
This spring, whatever you want to put on him, he does have one. I think he's in the top three for plate appearances at this point.
Has one double, I think.
He hit a double today,
yeah.
So he's got two extra base hits in the spring. It's not exactly what all the hype started after that 2-for-2 game. What was like a second game in the spring,
right?
And he's been very mediocre since then. But the hype had already been created, and the thing about spring training that kills me, and I don't know if you listened to our last episode, but it's that spring training stats only matter when it's a positive narrative for the Padres. If it's a negative narrative, if it's Profar hitting 111 right now, spring training stats don't, you absolute moron, you idiot, they don't matter at all.
I said the exact same things to Danny Ortiz and Eric when we were arguing about C.J.
Who's
Abrams.
Danny? Is he?
Yeah.
He's not a podcaster or anything.
They used to be, I think, a long time ago.
Was he on, what, Pod or something?
No. They weren't on the EVT. I think it was like the 5-5 or something like that. Or is that just kind of a myth, which we all think about?
I don't know what that is.
Anyhow, he would tell me, they would break down the stats about what Abrams would hit against major league pitchers or minor league ones. And I'd say that's bullshit. No one really cares about that. But anyhow, and I'm going to take just 10 seconds of your time, and then I'll go back to ripping on both Danny and Eric, because they both thought I was right about my bets. Their bets were the Padres were stupid enough to do something. I bet on the negative, and I lost twice. And I'm probably going to lose a third time. So, yeah, I think, put this right, we think Jackson Merrill's really good. He's our top prospect. When he was in Lake Elsinore in 2022, he was hurt. He had some good numbers there. And the big debate last spring, if you remember right, was whether he was going to start in San Antonio or Fort Wayne. The Padres did the right thing. Because our thing is we wanted to see how he handled velocity, wanted to see how he could hit some power, pull side. He showed he could do it in Fort Wayne. And, you know, he's coming up now in San Antonio. I think he did well. I just think it's like saying I'm going to bake you a cake and it's 20 minutes and I said to take the thing out after 15 minutes because I'm hungry. You don't do that.
With Merrill, my problem is that the promotion of him to the majors, the talk has mostly centered around his defense, right?
Yeah.
It's, can he handle, we can take for granted that he's going to hit, but is he going to play the position? My concern is if he's going to hit.
Yeah, I don't think anyone should take for granted he's going to hit, because he's probably going to really struggle.
Like I've heard our beloved Craig Elston, and he'll point out his hit tool was rated at 55. And that's misinterpreted sometimes as, okay, well, he's ready to hit in the majors if he's 55. But those are, that's not necessarily a reflection of how he is at this moment in the major leagues, against major league pitching.
Definitely. Because I think what you're going to see with Jackson is you're going to see a low strikeout rate. I think you see that in the major leagues. The question is how much quality contact is he going to have? Because, you know, all of us think Merrill should be, Ed Madfire's all five of us think Merrill should be start the year in the minor leagues at San Antonio. And it's not just because we're a bunch of mean, old, condescending pricks. That's separate, too. That's true. But also, the thing is, if you look at like the A-ball complex league, if you just swing at strikes, you can be very good. If you go to A-ball, and you know, you don't swing at, the pitcher throws a great slider early in the count, you force him to go middle in, that's good. Chisel out plate discipline. The big change is when you get to Double A, about 75% of the guys up there can play in the major leagues. It's just a question of how consistent they are. The other 25% are on the way out. So the question is, the big reason at bats are needed is, what do you do when a guy can throw a pair of sliders for strikes and it's 0-2? Then you got to have a plan. And, you know, it just takes a while to adjust to that. So that's why I think you should be back at least for about 3 or 4 more months, especially in the Texas League where those guys see each other so many times. I mean, the San Antonio team will go to Northwest Arkansas once at the beginning of the year, once in the second half. The rest of the time, all those guys do is just pound and pound and pound each other.
So, I know most of the Madfriars team ranked Jackson Merrill as their first number one prospect, right? When you were doing your top 30s, it was between Salas and him, right? Yeah.
Salas is even a bigger thing, which I'm sure you're going to like.
Didn't Ben Davey put him as first above Salas?
I think Ben Davey put Merrill above him. I got to take a look. But the cumulative one would be top 20.
That's not necessarily a statement that he's ready for the majors, right?
No.
And I think a lot of fans have misinterpreted over the years the meaning of a prospect ranking. And I saw it with C.J. Abrams. We saw it with Mackenzie Gore. There's like a lot of unrealistic expectations that are tied to what their prospect ranking is.
It's kind of like, in a way, it's a little bit like Hall of Fame voting, because the difference is when you say a prospect ranking, I mean, you and I could both have a guy. All the top four prospects in the Padres system by any ranking is Merrill, Salas, Lesko, and Snelling.
Sure.
And you and I could each have all four of those guys at a different level or rank or number, just on base what you value. If your biggest thing is, give me the guy who's the best four, who's probably going to be in the major leagues, be a contributor, probably being Snelling.
Lowest risk, right?
Yeah. If the guy
not necessarily the highest ceiling.
Highest ceiling would probably be a guy like Ethan
Salas. But a Grady Fuson, that era, where the target of the system was to accumulate pitchers and players that had a high likelihood of making the major leagues. Maybe not at a high ceiling, but college pitchers that would have a chance of making it.
Yeah, a lot of guys
hitters
who were using Rogaine and low A, stuff like that, yeah.
Graham Pauly's, if you will.
Well, Graham Pauly's a really interesting guy because he's a guy who wasn't even a starter full-time for Duke until, I think, his think it's sophomore year, and he just started making adjustments with his swing, and he really took off. He's also an econ guy, which I like a lot too.
Pretty bright guy. Super into analytics, right? I saw an interview with him last week where he talked about, you know, high level analysis of his swing that he's done.
He
reminded me a lot of discussions. You remember Danny Duffy? He was a pitcher for the Royals, high-level prospect. I think he's a pitching coach now. But he was one of the first people I would read about and be like, this guy gets it. He understands that his natural abilities are limited, but there are ways to maximize it. That's kind of what I got when I read what Graham Pauly talked about.
Well, I'm sure if Graham Pauly's going through about two or three econometrics classes at Duke, I mean, I don't think there's anything they're going to really throw at him on his swing that's going to really confuse him a hell of a lot. Yeah. He's a good guy. You know, Ethan Salas is someone who, you know, it's weird on Padres Twitter. The perspective on Ethan Salas is, unless I say, you know, with Joe Mauer going into the Hall of Fame, I don't know why Jay and I aren't writing the speech for him right now just to get it over with. Or we think he sucks. He's going to be a huge bust. Somewhere in there, there's a middle. Mm-hmm. Okay. I mean, Ethan Salas is another guy who hit 190 his first month. Hit 360 his second month, and then Preller and group decide, well, it's time to put him in double A. And he hit, you know, 200 at high A, brief stop at 4A, hit 190, I think, in about 7 or 8 games in San Antonio until he went down with a knee injury.
But he wasn't good at either level, high A or double A.
He was okay. I just think he was...
Not at the plate. He was bad at both places at the plate.
No, not at the plate. I think he just looked more tired than he did that, but... The part is, they should, in my opinion, again, they should have just left him at low A. He's a junior in high school. He could start off this upcoming year at Fort Wayne, mm-hmm. be a senior in high school. There just kind of tends to be this giant rush. Now, if you want to be fair, when Fernando Tatis came up, I would have been one saying he should have gone to El Paso.
But he put a full year in at... Fort Wayne was low A at the time, right?
He put in a full year at low A. He
almost got promoted. Essentially skipped Lake Elsinore.
He skipped Elsinore. He had about a week and a half at San Antonio, and then got injured, I think it was like late July in San Antonio. But, you know, that was another thing where, I mean, that worked out. I just don't think every prospect is Fernando Tatis, and they don't need to be.
At the same time, Tatis wasn't brought to the U.S. as soon as he was signed as an international player. He had a full year at the Dominican complexes before we traded for him with the White Sox.
I'm not sure about that. I think
quite a full year? After we traded for him mid-season, we brought him over in, like, September. He was still in the Dominican when we traded for him. He wasn't playing in the U.S. leagues at that time.
I thought he had been brought over with the White Sox, and I remember they traded James Shields. That's when I listened to your old guy Marver. I thought Marver had a great point on trading of Shields, which was mainly a cash dump. They got Tatis. He hadn't suited up to play one game in the Arizona Complex League yet. His first professional game was with the Padres in the ACL. Played there, played about a week in Tri-Cities, and then went to... in Fort Wayne. And again, and this always still makes me vomit a little bit in my mouth, is when we were looking at the prospects, Jay was the only guy who went out to see the Arizona Complex League. And he said, you know, this guy's about 6'3", 180. If he ever learns to lay off the slider, he could be someone who could be really good. The rest of us put, who did we put? Hudson Potts is the number one guy up there. So, you know, you can always screw up. That's what always bugs me when people sit there and catch him on Twitter going, well, yes, based on what Ethan Salas did, I really project he's going to be the Padres' everyday catcher, going to hit about 25 homers. Well, yeah, dude, you don't know.
You talked about Danny and Eric. A big thing on 5.5 back in the build years.
Yes.
Was just taking the top 20 prospects and then projecting out a lineup 3 years from now where you're like, we're set. We've got Hudson Potts at third. We've got who were the names from back then? Reggie Lawson's. We got Lawson, Morahon, Baez, Patino. We're set in the rotation for a decade.
I sat there and I drank the Kool-Aid on Morahon.
Luis Almanzar is going to be Manning shortstop. Like, we're fine.
Well, you know, I mean, the thing is like, you know, I just talked about how you can see the different guys coming up. That's what gets difficult, is if I'm telling you in a high A, go, you know, I don't know about this one guy. Yeah, he's hitting really well, but he just waits for the pitcher to make a mistake and hit the fastball. You don't see him hitting a lot of sliders. You'd go like, what are you, an idiot?
Yeah.
I mean, what's he supposed to? You kind of got to wait until
he gets to the level where he's challenged.
A classic example is, and you're old, you remember this too, is Jeff Decker. Jeff Decker was a hell of a player at the A-ball level. He was really, really good. Then suddenly he started getting sliders in Double-A. He never could adjust.
Well, and his, if I recall, Jeff Decker's strength was his eye, right? His eye and his waiting for a pitch, right? And so that would benefit you at the low levels to some degree, where you can wait for your pitch. You have the discipline.
It was his eye, yeah. He could really crank the ball. He stopped getting this big step. They shortened his stride. He got in better shape. But yeah, once he couldn't make that adjustment, it just wrecked it. It's too bad. It's a good kid, too.
Yeah, and so we started the discussion with my distaste for counting on prospects for the Padres. I'm scarred. I've been a fan for forever. I've gone through multiple... You know, everyone takes a dump on Kevin Towers with prospects and drafting. We had the number one minor league system in 2002. So it's not like he was nothing. He had a period where he was good at it, or at least people thought he was good at it.
Well, I'm older than you. I go back to the days of Mike Champion and Bill Allman.
Well, yeah, you're very old, John. Yes, no one's debating you. Yeah.
People always enjoy pointing that out to me, including some of the meaner assholes I work with in Matt Friars, yes.
Yeah, Ben Davey. Mm. I've been through it, right? I've gone through this. In 2016, our hopes were high. All we talked about was prospects for 3 years. Matt Friars' subscription numbers must have been off the charts in that time.
You were on
the radio like every 2 weeks back then.
With Darren,
And I feel like we're back to that stage right now where I'm being asked to be patient.
Right.
It's worse now. At least in the 2016 to 2019 years, the Padres were a cheap endeavor to be a fan of. That's not the case anymore. It's like $50 for a lawn seat to watch the game on TV.
I think one thing that is changing, and I didn't mean to cut you off, is just that I think people are seeing what happens when you have the philosophy, it's not my money. We're seeing, you know, the one reason all of us kind of got into minor leagues was we are Padre fans. We all grew up in San Diego. And we thought the only way they're really going to compete is by having a strong minor league system. And there wasn't that much coverage, especially back then in the UT or anywhere of it. And so that's why we got into it. And I think you do see some guys coming up. As far as the one thing that's kind of a narrative that's been kind of out there, which I don't think is true, is that Preller trades all these guys. Until he made the Juan Soto trade, which I still think I would do, okay? Even though it didn't work out, I think that was a deal that you had to do.
I'm 100% with you.
Yeah, okay. Preller hadn't traded a guy that's a top 100 prospect. And the only one he traded was two of them. He traded Tino in the Blake Snell trade, which worked out pretty well. Then he had a bad fuck-up where he traded a guy who he didn't take and Trey Turner.
Sure.
But he hasn't really traded those guys.
Arias? I thought Arias was borderline a top 100. Depends on the ranking, but I thought he had crested into the top 100.
I think he was
didn't he have a good year the year before we traded him?
He always had these halves. He'd have one half was really good, the other half wasn't.
I don't believe in players where I'm being asked to just wait around for their power to develop.
Well, one thing
which
he
is
has
one of the reasons I'm not super in on Jackson Merrill, but
I think Merrill will be okay because Merrill's kind of a left-right guy, and that's one reason we wrote that we wanted to see him in Fort Wayne. We wanted to see pull-side power from him, and he showed that. And I think he would show more of it in San Antonio if he just had a little bit of patience.
But what does that mean? Like, most of the so fans take prospect rankings very seriously, right? And they read these write-ups, and I don't know, whoever it is, Keith Law or whoever says,
right.
You know, with some adjustments and some growth, and if he gets some practice, like, he might hit 20 home runs someday. And the average fan hears that and is like, wow, he could hit 20 home runs every year. But what the actual statement is, he would peak at 20. Like, what... there's been, in recent history, in the AJ years especially, AJ seems to have a tendency to draft and try to develop guys who don't have the power tool at the time that he gets them, and that we're asked to wait for that to develop later on, right? I think guys like Robert Hassel, Dylan Head, we're being asked the same thing. I see this as like a recurring thing where he'll take an athlete and he wants to see that power develop down the line.
Well, one thing I would say...
That's my thing with Merrill is that...
Yeah.
He, other than that time at Fort Wayne, he hasn't actually really showed that much power. And we're starting... If he stays in center field, that's okay. Or shortstop. You can live with that, right? A guy that hits 10 home runs at those positions is okay. It seems like that's where AJ is now forcing him into center field, not left field. But I had a lot of issues with this when he was looking like a left fielder.
Well, I don't think he should be in left field.
CJ Abrams, too. We were also told with CJ that, just wait around. The power is going to develop.
Well, guys like CJ Abrams, Ryan Weathers, Luis Camposano, all those guys, I could say there were major mistakes in development. And, I mean, I'll try to hit these questions as you ask them. Is one thing on Merrill, he showed some pretty good power numbers. I thought, like Elsner, I don't have it in front of me, but they're more gap power. We thought he kind of developed into his body, and he has. Dylan Head, physically, from what I've seen pictures of in spring, I haven't been out there, looks like a lot different than Robert Hassel does. And Robert Hassel is another guy who looked really good all the way up to A-ball. He struggled in Double-A, especially with the Nationals. It's been horrible with them.
Didn't you see his spring stats that matter when it's a positive storyline for the...
Oh, I don't... It depends if he's against Major League or Minor League pitching. Thank you, Danny Ortiz. Okay. Shout out. I think it just is... With drafting, I mean, as much as... Preller has to be responsible for everything, but the drafting is a big part of Chris Kemp. It was Mark Connor beforehand. And I would say, I don't think I'm a fanboy or an apologist for Preller. They've drafted really well the past 3 years in the top. I would say, look, if you get the two I would go, if you got James Wood and Jackson Merrill, that's good. That's by national rankings. I'd say getting Dylan Lesko, which was a pretty good move, and Robbie Snelling was excellent. They kind of changed their philosophy internationally. They kind of just put all their chips in on one guy. And we'll see how it works out with their guys. So far, it's looked okay, but it's a very early look.
Well, I was told it's a masterclass of scouting, that he identified the consensus number one player and then committed an entire draft class to it, or an entire international class to it. Yeah, he found those guys. Did you know that? Did you know the Nationals GM didn't even know who Ethan Salas was?
One guy told me was pretty... I'll try my best not to use sources. I can't stand it when people say that. But one of the guys with the Padres told me the original deal for Soto was it was going to be Abrams and Hassel and Gore straight up for Soto, because the Nationals knew who James Wood was. He's from the D.C. area, and they weren't that crazy on him until their scout on the West Coast said, hey, if we're going to trade Soto, we need to get this guy. Now, look, James Wood, and I'm a huge, huge fan of James Wood. He's going to be his numbers in Double-A were okay. They were good. He's looked real good this spring. But what gave him a lot of trouble was sliders, and he's 6'6".
Whiffs,
no matter how
whiffs. Yeah, whiffs a lot.
No matter how good you are, I mean, if you're a pitcher, let's suppose you're in Double A, and you can throw. Let's say you're maybe projected as a back end starter. If you have a quality slider and you throw about 90 to 93, you see a guy 6'6" coming up there, and you can command it. You're okay with that. Yeah, I'll take my chances. Mm-hmm. I'll find spots to throw against him. So we'll see. I mean, he's a tremendous athlete, but we'll find out. But yeah, the draft is always really interesting. Padres did good in later rounds. I think in 2022, I think with Marcy, I think it's a good credit to them. I think Pauly, 13th round. So they deserve some credit there. Their biggest problem is, again, how I see it is, they're very scout-driven. I think development, in my opinion, is tougher than scouting, because each guy is kind of different, and you you got one group, you got the people in San Diego think one thing, the affiliates think someone else. Like Tirso Nellis, who Mark and I saw out there in San Antonio this past year, when we weren't checking out his dong, but when we're looking at baseball,
it's hard to avoid.
Yeah, sometimes you got to kind of put the fans and our subscribers first. So anyhow, we're looking at Tirso. And Tirso had just gotten hot. The manager and hitting coach had told us how they'd worked for 2 months. And he had a great line about making sure Tirso's mind was where his feet were, getting him to loft the ball. Suddenly I decided, no, he needs to go to El Paso. He's had like three good series. And you could tell those guys at the time couldn't really say it, but they were saying he needs to be here and solidify this stuff a little bit more. Like another thing with AJ is you look at Trent Grisham, and that's the classic thing. He was fixated on him. They let Trent Grisham go back to having like a golf swing on a bat compared to like this. And so that's a typical scout thing. They'll say, oh, this guy was great when I saw him. All these idiots in development fucked him up. So there's always been more of a, he's kind of leaned a little too much, in my opinion, on the scouting side.
Do you think AJ loves the stories where, it was publicized a couple years ago, but it'd be like, wow, the Padres lead the major leagues in prospects that have made the big leagues, that have debuted in the big leagues. I remember Agler, who's an employee of the Padres, of course, so he has his own motivations, mm-hmm. but he was really big on pointing out this stat. Does AJ love anything more than being the one to take credit for a prospect making the big leagues when he's literally the one who can turn the key on making someone into the big league, promoting someone to the big leagues?
I think even though he would not admit it, I think one thing he really loves saying is he loves seeing all these guys in the top 100. He loves seeing that somehow he's got some really magic eye and his guys can do that. Look, some of the things are true. I mean, there's been enough of them, too, which he's messed up on, and everyone is going to mess up on those. I mean, if you want to talk about the great line you said about scouting the stat line, you have to remember, if you and I both went to the University of Florida and we could see Pete Alonso and Buddy Reed out there, and you're saying, I like Alonso, he's hitting 385 with power, and I said, you know, HJ, you're an idiot. Let me tell you what I project Buddy Reed to do. He's going to do this, this, and this. And you go, well, I kind of like guys who can hit. And since Alonzo's hitting 100 points better than Reed right now with power, I don't really care if he's a fat, slow dude who can only play first base. And those are kind of right, that's what makes it interesting.
You'd point out Buddy Reed's incredible athleticism. Oh, and yeah. You don't understand what his ceiling could be.
The best line I was at spring training. I was talking to this one scout from another team that I know, and we're watching Buddy Reed. And we were talking about the same thing. He could play hockey and soccer. And Reed whiffs on three straight pitches. And the guy looks at me and he goes, that's a bad slap shot, let alone a swing. That's an ugly, ugly fucking swing. So
I'm not going to lie. I watched quite a bit of Buddy Reed at Lake Elsinore when he was there for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Real bad. Real bad plate appearances.
That was his highlight.
Yeah.
You didn't see him when he screwed up at Amarillo like I did. And you and I could probably take people deep in Amarillo. I mean, that's a bandbox. Great, great chicken fried steak, though. One of the best I ever had on the road.
I'll take notes for the next time I'm in Amarillo. Yeah.
Probably that shouldn't be on your bucket list.
Okay. Let's see. Luis Campusano changed his... Have you watched him at all this spring?
Yeah. I watched
what do you
him,
think
I
of his Luis. New batting stance? His incredibly open batting stance that's come out of... It's like he was like, last September was my best period ever in the pros. I'm going to just change everything.
Personally, I didn't think Luis Campusano would ever be where he is now. I saw him in El Paso a couple times where, you know, he would just be jogging, not doing anything on the bases. It was so bad the fans would sit there. He was on second base, and a guy hit ball to the gap. About four guys in front of me yelled, they're really nice fans in El Paso, too. Run, Luis. Run. God damn it. Try it. Try once. You know, and he's come a long, long, long way.
Can you verify something I heard from someone?
Maybe.
Did Luis Campusano's behavior on the charter flights for El Paso almost cost the team their charter contract with the airline?
I'd heard that.
I don't know the details of what he did, but is that a true rumor? Or is that not true? We can never say whether it's true or false. Is that something that you've heard as
well? You know, the thing is, when I get to go on podcasts or on the radio and all that, you hear a bunch of rumors and you hear them second or third hand. But to answer your question, yes, I heard that. Do I know if it's true? I don't know if it's true.
what I'd heard is that he wasn't held back because of his baseball skills per se. It was a lot of like mental stuff, focus, concentration, effort.
Well, you know,
and a lot of people, when it's pointed out that AJ has a tendency historically to rush prospects much faster than other systems, they point to Luis Camposano and they say, well, how do you explain Camposano, who they held down in AAA for the whole season and when people were clamoring for him in the major leagues? My understanding was with Camposano, it wasn't necessarily whether he could hit. It was other stuff, like, can he sustain a major league lifestyle? Is he going to implode when he gets up here?
There was that, but you got to remember, Camposano was a guy who they promoted from high A. They sent him, they skip him at the double A, which wasn't a bright move.
Oh, I totally forgot about that.
Yeah, and then they put him up in triple A. The stuff on him had to do a lot of it. And, you know, kind of when you get back to Salas, is you're not looking at him just as like a left fielder. You're looking at him to be able to run a pitching staff, get along with him. And that's the part where, from everything I understand, he's just come light years. Now, after a while, Camposano wouldn't even talk with us. And the thing that's funny is his family is still subscribers to Matt Friars. But, you know, we didn't bother him. He was nice. I think he had a lot of different anxiety issues and some things. I'm really happy he is where he is. We never doubted his talent. I just didn't. I from what I saw the last time he was in El Paso, I remember I came back and I thought, there's no way this guy is going to do it. So as far as his hitting goes, well, Luis knows a hell of a lot more about hitting than I do. If it works for him, that's great.
I mean, to be fair, other than that, his other previous auditions in the major leagues were somewhat disastrous at the plate. So it's not
my biggest problem.
I'm not sure it's a given.
Well, one thing.
For me, Luis Camposano is for the, if you really want to find paths for the Padres in 2024 to be competitive, I think the road very much goes through Luis Camposano on what
Michael
he provides.
King. Yeah, I
think they're two of the most critical players. The talk is going to be on the superstars, but to me, it's Luis Camposano duplicating what he did in September over an entire season, because when you look at the deficiencies in the team, like catcher was a glaring deficiency last year. So anything that they can improve marginally over last year is a net positive, right? So that's what I'm looking for. It's not going to come from Higashioka or Brett Sullivan.
Well, since
new
I'm on,
DH.
Since I'm on the negative podcast, I mean,
realistic.
Yes, I'll jump in for you here on one thing that I thought was a weird story was. I thought it was a great story when they point out how Musgrove helped Camposano quite a bit. Worked with him, got things done. A great move by Joe Musgrove. My biggest question is, and I think you would think this too if you're running the team, going, if we got a guy who's the catching coach on the team who's got two guys to work with, why is my starting pitcher having to sit there and do this? Mm-hmm. What am I paying you for? What am I paying any of these guys for? Development up here that you can't get through to him. I mean, there was a great story.
Does he take to the coaching?
Well, you know what? You got to kind of you kind of got to figure that out. There's a great story one time about Matt Latos and when he was with the Padres. The Padres used to have this rule, like only major league pitchers could wear, you know, earbuds in when running. So Latos has his earbuds in there running. He's doing pulls, and the coach says, Matt, Take your earbuds out. You're not a major league pitcher anymore. Latos takes one out, looks at the coach, goes, stupid rule. Puts him back in, runs back. And then the guy is sitting there waiting for him, stomping his foot. And Latos looks at him and goes, you got a fucking problem? He goes, no. Goes back in. So the coach comes in, sees Fuse on, screams, I had enough of this guy. It's either him or me. You got to get rid of him. And Fuson said, I think, Coach, I think you're a great guy. I'll write you a hell of a resume. There's only so many guys out there that are 6'6 and can do what he can do.
Yeah. At this point, he was like a top 100 prospect.
Yeah, he was
like
really good. I interviewed Latos when he was out here in the Atlantic League. It was kind of fun to talk to. Nice kid, just, you know, not exactly a Mensa member, let's put it that way.
No, yeah, no, I never thought that of Matt Latos. Let's
a lot
see.
Of talent.
We've talked about, who else is left here?
Well,
Marcy.
You can talk about Snelling and Lesko, I think, which was a good move by the Padres. Marcy, I think, is a good example of a really a great move by the scout, because Marcy went to a small university, Central Michigan, played right field, and the coach put him out there because he was in the metrics a lot. He thought the ball, that was a bigger field, more difficult to hit, so he put his best outfielder out there. And the scout said, you know, Marcy has a really good eye at the plate, which he does. He could probably play center. And when you read Baseball America's report, they really didn't sell him, right, is that, you know, he's as good a center fielder as I've ever seen in the minor leagues. Takes tremendous routes.
Well, and I think a lot of people assume if you're really fast, you'll be good at center field, right?
Yeah.
My experience watching Padres prospects that are super fast and play center field is they actually sucked at playing center field. Like, Luis Durango is one of the fastest prospects in recent history of the Padres, right? He sucked at playing center field.
I'll give you a better example. Was Franchy Cordero. If you talk in terms of athleticism, in terms of strength, speed, maybe leaping ability, was a god-awful center fielder.
Well, absolutely. Even at the major league level, Will Myers, it was as athletic as we had, right, at the time. Beyond terrible at center field. Like, if AJ pulls the plug on you after a month after hyping you up as a center fielder, and I'm going to be honest, a lot of the stuff I read about Merrill in center field is the same stuff I read about Will Myers in 2015 in spring training in center field, because that was considered a very risky, unorthodox move, right, to move Will into center field. And Will was so bad that, you know, they took him out, they canceled the plan after a month, right?
The tough thing about playing center is, if you can run and you can throw, center's a really good position to play because, you know, you can see the ball really clearly. What makes it difficult is, you know, is like being a free safety in football, taking one wrong step. And also it can be dangerous because when you go back on the ball, these guys are running into that fence like full speed, and you can really get hurt. Watch on the corners, guys are waiting at the wall. Mm-hmm. They can make that jump. If you really want to, you can go back to an old YouTube video in which Travis Jankowski crashed into a wall full speed. He nearly lost his arm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a horrible injury.
Well, and going back to it, like, I'm not trying to be negative on Marcy. In fact, right. I think it's positive on him, where he's not necessarily the fastest player on the field, but he's at least played the position before, right? Like, he knows how to play the position.
The thing that's bad is both Dave J and I, our resident curmudgeon, were talking. And, I mean, both of us are against Merrill coming up because we think it's rushing him. I mean, Merrill looks like about a 10-year veteran compared to Paulie and Marcy, who spent most of the year at Fort Wayne. They have under 20 games. And just, you know, Paulie needs to get a clear defensive position. Marcy made huge gains in terms of being able to, you know, get the bat on the ball, hit with some power. He looks more like a high school halfback. And I just, you know, you just want to see him build on these gains. He doesn't need to be thrown into major league pitching right now. That's the only thing I think. I mean, he could turn out to be a really good player. I mean, I like all these guys a lot. I just think they're being rushed.
So let me ask this in, like, more general. Like, I'm sure most of the times you do interviews, people just go through a list of players and, like, what do you think of this guy, this guy, this guy? I've already read it all. I don't know if I necessarily need that. In fact, they can find that information on madfriars.com already.
Yeah, for $5 a month, it pays for our airlines, our rental cars, and our hotels.
Yeah. What I'm more interested in is, like, systematic things. And a lot of, I think there's a lot of people that don't necessarily know that much about the minor leagues that read prospect rankings and now consider themselves experts on minor league development.
Right.
And so I see things, it's like, well, why do we even have AAA? Like, we should just get rid of the El Paso entire team and just promote people right. Oh, you know, the good prospects are just going to get promoted to the major leagues and we don't even need AAA. What would be your argument as to why AAA El Paso, despite it being an extreme hitting environment, is important for minor league development, not just parking quadruple A or depth, right? Like, what is the value of El Paso to development?
Well, one, in the Pacific Coast, like, El Paso kind of is somewhat of a neutral park. There's worse places. You know, Reno's much worse. Las Vegas is.
Salt Lake,
Albuquerque. So they're all kind of difficult. I think the best example of that is if you're going to see guys, if you're a hitter, that have much more of an ability to throw secondary pitches. And that's the toughest thing about hitting in the major leagues. The thing that's hard for people like you or I or everybody else to realize is, you know, Morihone, we can get him as a great example of this. If you throw something 96 or 97 miles an hour, and I know you don't have a changeup or a breaking pitch, good chance I'm going to hit the ball. Not necessarily going to be a hit. I'm going to hit the ball hard, and enough of those guys will. One thing that's really fascinating when you go to different levels, and I'm lucky enough to be able to do this, is if you watch it like low A, when the guys are up there in the first inning, the guys are kind of on the rail, they're screwing around, they're like kids. They are kids. You see a triple A, all those guys are right on the rail, they're breaking down what the guy has, they talk, and by the second or third inning, you know, you can see them making adjustments. A great example is a couple years ago, I was in San Antonio and I saw Thomas Eshelman, who now is a Fort Wayne pitching coach. Mm-hmm. Last year he was Blake Elsinore's. And I remember he was going to pitch the next day, and I'm in there talking with Wellman, the manager, and I kind of go, you know, this guy is like a journeyman filler. And Wellman goes, "No, you're really going to enjoy watching him pitch." He threw seven innings. Shutout, hit 87 about three times. He cut, he sank, he dipped the fastball, moved it. You never heard so many guys yelling "fuck" in your life. I see him next month. He got moved up to El Paso. He got through about two innings, and then it wasn't just the altitude. He got hit because guys went up there and said, "Okay, I'm laying off this pitch. I'm looking for it here in this zone." Well, guys up at the double A level was a really prospect loud team. It was like Frisco, the Rangers team. They were all going middle in, and he just read that. Here's what a cutter looks like. Here's what this looks like. And that's kind of the bigger difference you see.
Do you think that is a valuable skill for them? As far as like, because to me, what I'm hearing is like it's a closer to the major leagues environment in that your peers are more skilled at scouting the pitcher. Like it's, I don't know, do teams provide more resources to there? Is there more camera? I mean, at a higher level, there's higher attendance. Is there more cameras for things like an iPad in the dugout or something like that?
I think they're worried about if they send guys to El Paso, they can tend to get a little pull happy. They also, the Padres have a bigger thing, which I'm not altogether bought in on. It's that they want to keep this, and I know you're going to bring up the core four.
Yes.
Yeah, because it's just out there.
So they can learn how to win, right?
Yeah. So
that's why it's important that they rush Salas to double A for the incredible value of the double A playoffs.
Yeah, worked out for Carlos Asuaje, right?
Worked out for none of the core four.
I think Renfro is still there. Hedges, bless him, has a career. As you and I are getting older, Hedges is going to have a major league pension with 10 years. I mean, we can make fun of him all he wants. He's laughing all the way to the bank.
That guy sat in Claremont, too. He sat in San Diego forever.
Oh, is he in Claremont?
Yeah, Hedges? Bought a house in Claremont. Jesus. It was highlighted in like a real estate magazine.
Oh, my God.
Nearby our beloved Eric. He could run into Austin Hedges at any time, Ed.
Well, Eric named his son after him.
I know. I'm well aware.
Little Hedgie.
That's what I was here about El Paso. It's like, what? The other thing, it's tied to El Paso. It's, okay, Marcy has 40 at-bats or whatever in double A.
Yeah.
If you talk to a casual fan who's mm-hmm. read prospect rankings, they're like, well, let's take Chris Snelling. Let's take Robbie Snelling.
Yeah.
They're like, well, why don't they just call him up? And like, then Niebla can work with him, and he can develop at the major league level. That's what I always hear. It's like, well, if we call up Marcy, he'll be working with major league coaches and he'll develop at the major league level. Like, completely invalidating and devaluing what a minor league system provides for development. Like, well, what do you think?
Let's look at another example of like when David Jay and I look like assholes on Twitter, which is always kind of fun.
Mostly David Jay, but.
Yeah, of course. He has Arby's on his fingers and all that. But anyhow, Nick. Remember Nick Margavishes?
Yeah, of course.
He was really good in A-ball, right? He's the type of guy who the Fort Wayne and like Elsinore guys at that time wanted to talk to us about. He threw about 89, 91. He could move the fastball in, move it out, had a changeup. No consistent breaking pitch, all right? He went up to double-A for one start. Then AC starts saying he's going to be in the major leagues. He's going to be in the rotation. David Jay and I tell AC that he's an idiot. Of course, he's not going to be in the major leagues. He needs to develop some other pitch. And AC was right when we wrote back on Twitter, like, yeah, we'll just call you an idiot again and look like shit. And AC was very nice. He sent us back a nice DM, said we had a great sense of humor. But we were right. It's because what major league hitters saw is he couldn't throw a consistent breaking pitch. So if we go back to Robbie Snelling, Robbie Snelling's fastball is really good. His changeup has come a long way. Robbie will be the first to tell you he needs more separation between his curve and slider, and he's going to need to do that. And so doing that against less developed hitters at AA is going to help his development more than going against major leaguers right now.
To his credit, he did do it in AA. Like, yeah, he showed this, you know, pretty high success for that. So
I think about three or four starts, not a lot. Yeah.
So, in, you know, in my mind, that's what I've always said, like, I don't really start caring about prospects other than, like, my attendance at Lake Elsinore games. Like, I want to see interesting players. Other than that, well, I need to see a performance at the AA level.
And I've used that in a couple places. I think I always give you full credit on that as a prospect guy. No, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, I think you should just enjoy the success all the way up to AA. They're doing well. That's wonderful.
But it's meaningless to me. It's meaningless. I know it's not because it's someone that tear, you know, as we've bragged about many times, you and I were very early on Juan Soto,
right,
as a prospect, mm-hmm, as a Potomac cannon,
right,
not on any prospect list at that time, mm-hmm, but you could see on the stat line or limited at that time, very limited video of him, like, I don't know, he looks different, like he's OPSing 170 at low A.
Yeah, like I thought,
and so that'll raise my attention. The thing is, with a lot of our players, I'm not seeing a 170 OPS at low A. I'm seeing like 125, and then it kind of like I'm being asked to have faith. The power will develop. As he goes up in higher levels, you're going to see he's going to grow into his power, and sometimes it could happen, right? But I don't like that what if of that. And honestly, I haven't seen the results of like. In the last 10 years, who that was a high-level prospect that we were told, just wait, he's going to grow into a lot of power?
Tatis.
But Tatis always had the power.
Not really. We were told
when he was first discovered as a prospect, and then he started getting on the radar, the talk was his power at that time.
Well, you got to remember, Tatis was a guy who, it wasn't a bad pick with Hudson Potts over him at Arizona Complex ACL level. Tatis was okay. He was good. And even when I saw him in May, and that's when I first started going on Darren Smith's show on a regular basis, and I said, you know, you could see it was starting to come. And then it really did develop because his body filled out more. But yeah, I mean, a lot of it's just...
I mean, Buddy Reed, we were told the same, like when that name popped up.
Yeah.
I feel like I've heard this tale from the Padres in the A.J. Preller era.
Uh-huh.
And I guess I just don't. I don't see the results. I haven't seen the results yet.
Well, on Salas,
even Arias, there was like talk of him developing power at one
there
point.
There was. I thought that was more wishful thinking. He could. I mean,
according to the Padres, it had been developed.
Well, see, this what you're bringing up is a good point because this is the biggest difference between scouting and development. And one old scout told me this in San Antonio. I think was really good. He said, scouting high school is pretty easy. I just look at a guy and can he hit 450 feet? Yeah. Can a guy throw 98? Wonderful. But how you and I define value is what's going to help you win. And baseball is about consistency. So to develop that consistency is tough. The biggest thing I saw like on Salas, which I liked last year in spring training, was just watching his at-bats. And I mean, the way he thought about him and you could see was he thought like a guy in AA now. Now, that's the counter-argument. On South, I disagree with it, but to provide your listeners with a fair point, is the Padres thought, look, you know, what we're saying, the quality of his bats, how he's at the plate, we kind of rather have him working with some of these guys. Hopefully we'll see him in the major leagues. You know, right now it's just about results, because right now his approach is what we want to see. Again, I don't buy that, but that's the counter-argument.
Do you think AJ will push him to AA? Because what I was told is that for top prospects, AJ does not like demoting them.
Oh, yeah, he's going to be in AA.
Starting out of spring training?
I think it's a mistake, yes.
I mean, you thought it was a mistake last year, right?
Yeah,
for the audition. Most people did.
Unlike
every prospect write-up of him this year pointed out the unorthodox treatment of him last year.
Unlike other people on Padres Twitter, AJ doesn't really DM or text me about what John Conniff thinks about who should go up there.
Well, you're not a 5'4" diminutive security guard, so no, I guess he's not calling
you. Yeah, well, I mean, we all have our likes and stuff like that. Yeah, but I think he could be okay. But here's the thing is, if you go back to this, last year with Merrill going to Fort Wayne, when Merrill struggled early on because he had some illness, he is cold, the velocity and all this, there was no thought that, hey, he needs to go back to like Elsinore. No, he's where he is, just leave him alone. If Salas struggles the first 2 months in San Antonio, first thing someone like you is going to say, and it's going to be a very reasonable, fair opinion, in all seriousness, is what were you doing, guys, put him up there? Why?
I guess with him, I don't get it. It was a novelty promotion, right? Because the talk at the time, because there was like eyebrows raised when he was called up to AA, and it was like, don't worry, guys. Like, this isn't real. They just want him to sit on the bench and hang out in a playoff scenario. And then everyone accepted it and was like, okay, well, that makes sense. Like, he's just hanging out for a week. It's okay. But like, now that that's become sticky and they're now pushing him after very, very few at-bats and time at high A,
In case someone's listening and the first thing they're going in their mind is, what about Homer Bush Jr.? Why aren't you saying this? He's going to go. Oh. Homer Bush Jr. was, from what I understand, Marcy was hurt, and they needed someone up there to play center.
Right.
And they told him that. And he's rightly, and from what I understand, he's going back to
Florida. He's not a top prospect, so they're not pushing him back to AA.
Well, he's a top 20 prospect right.
on the national scene he's unimportant on the national scene. Yes. Right now, another guy who's supposedly going to grow into the power someday, but
could, yeah, he's a talent, but you know, we'll see. I mean, all the things on prospects, what you're doing is, and this is what I kind of get, I learned this a long time ago when I first started, when Will Venable went up from Fort Wayne to San Antonio. At that time it was a low A to double A jump, and I go on the broadcast with the San Antonio announcer, and he goes, well, you saw Will Venable. What do you project that he's going to do at the major league level? And this is in May. He's hitting well in May. I go, well, you know, he's athletic. He can do this, this, and this. He goes, no, what do you see in projection? And I said, well, I don't know. I mean, you got to see how it plays out the whole year. You got to see what happens in guys who... No, come on. You're kind of avoiding the question. I go, okay. I think he's going to steal 40 bases and hit 25 home runs and play Gold Glove center field. Really? I go, yeah, I hope Santa Claus comes down the chimney, too. I mean, I don't know. And the thing is, when you read guys on Twitter and they try to put some mathematical thing saying, oh, based on his age and what he hit in 1 month in low A, this is where you can project him for that. That's someone pulling something out of their ass.
Well, or like his 55 future value on fan graphs equals 2.4 WAR this year. Like, it's not necessarily a mathematical equation like that, right? Like,
well, you should think about this a
lot. Because there's a lot of players. Like, you could take Matt LaPorta. Do you remember him? He was like the number 3 prospect in baseball. He hit like 50 home. Brandon Wood. Like, there's a lot of people where their power future value is like 60, 65, and it's not everything, right? Like, there's a lot between the future value and actual major league production.
We'll put it this way. I like Eric Langenhagen a lot. I like Keith Law a lot. I like, you know, Riley quite a bit on ESPN. But a long time ago, I met Josh Barfield in Fort Wayne when he was working for the Diamondbacks. And he's one of the first guys I interviewed when he was with Lake Elsinore and Mobile. And he was telling me what his job was. His job was to kind of scout the systems of 3 major league teams. And pretty much he saw the AAA, AA, both A-ball teams, at least for one series, in the first half, and then the second half, and then saw the teams in short season, then in rookie leagues. He saw about 125 games. Okay, so Josh was supposed to be an expert on, like, the Pirates, the Reds, and the Brewers, which is cool. He was not an expert on all 30 teams, on all the draft, on all the trades that come through. And one thing that people, like Langenhagen wrote, and he does 30 teams, I do one part-time, and it's great, but he said, you know, Jairo Ariarte looks like skinny man throwing, and a couple people picked up on this. And I said, no, he's not. And I said, you know, this is kind of the advantage of Matt Fryer. I know he saw him pitch. I talked to Jairo Ariarte. Ariarte's 6'3", 211. Okay, that just, we can all discuss what the outcomes can be. That's great, but we're all going to keep our facts on the same level. And that's hopefully it's the one thing we try to do at Mad Friars is, you know, we think our readers and listeners are intelligent for making their own decisions. We just want to tell you this is what the guys do, and you can make your own mind up what they're going to do.
All right. Let's get to just real briefly on expectations for this year.
Okay.
I don't know. Talking about prospects tends to depress me. It's not, for me, it's not a hopeful topic. I know for many fans, and God, Eric Grubner desperately wants us to think it's a positive, hopeful topic where, you know, it makes perfect sense that we would pay 25% higher prices for tickets this year because we've got a minor league system on the way. Actually, yeah, I have one more minor league system only because it benefits me personally. I enjoy going to Storm games. My kids like the Storm games better than Padres games, if we're being honest.
Great places for kids.
It has a dancing Baskin-Robbins character.
Yeah.
Baby Thunder, big hit.
Did Mark talk to you about his unnatural fear of cats?
No.
Yeah, Mark doesn't like him. He kind of freaks him out. It's kind of like, you know, like Anthony Bourdain with like nurse shoes.
Mm-hmm.
It's a weird thing. He thinks he's like some giant, tall, red, freaky clown. I don't know. I kind of like Cass.
Well, yeah, I think so, too.
Yeah, well, you got to bring Mark on and have him talk about his fear of that.
All right, I will.
All right.
Who do I want to watch at Lake Elsinore this year?
Dylan Head.
No power.
We're not sure about that. Dylan Head, I think from what I looked at Jerry's
Are you going
pictures,
off lifting pictures? Because this is the Jose Azucar argument.
And Dylan Head has got a lot. The thing about Head, which I thought was interesting, was I don't think he used all of his speed last year. He showed a lot better eye, had a lot more baseball skills than people thought. He could be, there's a couple young pitchers that could be up there that could be fun to watch. Romeo Santabria is a first baseman, could be up there shortly. He could be someone to watch. Cannon Kemp, I think.
Okay.
A Texan who's about 6'6". Gave him like $725,000 out of the draft. Keeping on him, he could be okay. I think you're going to see, DeVries up there too sometime this year. That'd be my guess.
That'd be good.
Yeah.
I feel like, well, the other top prospects kind of skipped Elsinore or never really gave me a chance to see them.
Which ones? Lesko was there. I saw him in Elsinore with Charity.
How long was he there?
He was there for about a good... He got up there, I think, in June, and he was there for about 6 weeks. Yeah. Fun guy to watch. Had a much better curve than it was advertised.
Will very real and completely actual prospect Wyatt Hoffman be there?
Yeah, you know, and that's like a...
Do you get a little giggle that he's in at spring training again and getting time in the spring training games?
Well, I mean, on my chat group with Eric and Danny Ortiz and Kevin Charity, our thought was if their little man gets to play in Lake Elsinore, our little man, Danny, should get to play in Lake Elsinore, too. I mean, Danny probably couldn't play short, but he could do something. He could stop some balls at second or third base.
Like, Wyatt Hoffman's not a real prospect, right? Like, he has family money from Trevor, so he doesn't really need to worry about, like, getting a job, but...
Yeah, you know, look, I'm sure
he's a novelty, right?
I'm sure he hears a lot of this shit, and to be fair to him, he's out there playing and trying his best. He's, put it this way, he's a lot better. He played at a Division I school baseball at Pacific, so he did better, I think, than you or I did playing baseball. I mean, it's really difficult. I mean, one thing... slightly off topic is we always get guys who want to say like SEC baseball is that like the equivalent of AA? No, SEC baseball is about the equivalent of a short season. The guys are really good. There's an example. Kevin Copps is a guy who was a pitcher of the year in college, dominant player at the University of Arkansas.
People wanted him called up right after the draft.
Yeah, I mean, the problem is Kevin Copps, he throws make sure I don't pronounce this wrong, a gyro ball, which is like a power slider. And it got all college hitters swinging at. A guy at AA looks at it. They can see it coming. They know 75% of the time he's not going to throw it for a strike. They sit. They wait. Then he has to throw something inside at 92 or across the plate, and he gets hit. And so there's just a huge difference in the skill level of guys at AA level and in the pros, and even at low A.
Yeah.
You know, Hoffman's out there, and from everything I understand, is he's a great teammate. He works his butt off. Just, you know, but the numbers, I can try to spin this as positively as I can because I don't want to be just jumping on top of him. But Yeah, I mean, he's hit 191 in 2 years. He's going to be 25 years old.
I don't know. He makes me think of Johnny Manziel. It's not, or Russell Wilson.
He could probably play a little better.
Okay, last thing on the Major League team. What are your expectations for the year?
You know, I think they could be better than they were last year because I think one thing is no one is talking this year about where the parade's going to be, and the expectations are pretty low.
How many wins do you think that's worth? More than one Blake Snell, like one Michael Wacha?
Well, Blake Snell was frustrating as hell. And
not
I think,
last year.
Yeah.
He had like historical run prevention last year.
Yeah, but no one's really signing up to get Blake Snell a 6-year deal either, though.
Right. But it's like the casual fan is like, oh, well, didn't you see our Pythagorean record last year? And it's like, okay, but yeah, that was the record with all these players on it last year. And like they're gone.
The guy can make the argument better than me about... It's all going to buy into the... I think the whole... A big part of the season is going to come down to how well the Soto trade works out. And Eric Longenhagen, I'll give him some credit, because he wrote, I thought, a very good analysis after the trade that, you know, if Michael King can pitch, it's a big if. I think, but you know what? I think it's as big an if Tyler Glasgow is going to be healthy for a full year in L.A. And if the guy Brito and Vasquez can pretty much replicate what... You know, Wacha and Lugo did, who were kind of journeyman guys too. Then maybe
they were the second and third best pitchers on the staff last year.
And if Yu Darvish is healthy again, if you know Musgrove can pitch, I don't know.
And I'll be up front. I'm bullish on Michael King. I do think he's going to put together a healthy year. I think Saris gave him like an F grade on injury. I think he can put up 150 innings. I'm not really doubting that. My concern is more when the trade was made, we were told, oh, this adds all this incredible depth, right? You don't understand. We didn't have a pitching staff.
Well, trade had to be made for money. I don't know why anyone just couldn't come out and say that.
Because at the time, the story was the $32 million would get spent on something, right? And it hasn't.
Yeah, see, I push back a little bit on that. I think that was a story on Padres Twitter. Anyway,
and the media and official AJ said that in the interview the day after.
All someone had to do is take a look at the FanGraphs chart on Cots baseball contracts, where it brings out what the 26-man payroll is and what the CBT for $40 million is, and figure out that Padres ownership was not going to write a $40 million check again. Just as a luxury tax. Well, and also, if you go over a third time, it's even going to be higher.
Yeah, and all of that was obvious at the time. However, I mean, you said no one was saying it. AJ literally said it in his interview the day after. Like, this was team said that the plan was to find payroll flexibility because of that. And the assumption was, well, we can't possibly judge this trade until we see what they spend the $32 million on.
Well, I'm going to go with
now,
you.
At the same time, I think... Brito looks okay in the spring. Yeah. I don't know. Vasquez got lit up today really badly. I don't know if that's meaningful or not. But what I'm looking at...
You all right?
Yeah. Matt Waldron is projected by a lot of people to still be the number five starter. And the whole point of the trade at the time was like, God, the last thing we want is for Avila and Waldron to be our 4-5 in the rotation. And they are right now.
I'm not sure.
Okay, so we added this, and we subtracted two outfielders.
Well, Avila or Waldron, if I understand, might be the five. And
Waldron, probably.
Yeah, but, well, I mean, right now you can have a starting five of Darvish, Musgrove, King,
Brito, it looks like the four.
And Vasquez would be the fifth.
You think they're going to put Vasquez at five and not use him as a reliever?
Yeah, if you're asking me about what they're going to do on the major league level, my thing is just I get the same information you do. And I got maybe less because... I trust you. That's what AJ said. If AJ said that, someone should have asked a question, calling him out, going, "How are you gonna use $32 million to spend when you'll be in the same spot you are now?"
Okay, but contemporarily, like going back to December.
Yeah, no, I think you're right.
The sentiment at the time. Remember, AC reported it would be a $200 million payroll, and everyone was like, AC's never right on payroll. It's actually going to be $215 to $225 if you know anything about the Padres. And, like, Peter Seidler was dead already at that point. Mm-hmm. It's not like... It's like it's incrementally moved. That you know, the goalposts have moved from 250 to 225 to 215 to 200 to 189 to whatever we're at now, 159 or something.
Right.
And... everyone accepts it. They're like, well, you don't.
Well, AC should have been a little clearer in his terms because, again, I'm just looking off what's on Baseball Prospectus on that so people know where I'm looking at. The payroll in terms of the 40-man one, which counts on the CBT, which I think is the only relevant number, I think is about 215 or something like that right now. And that includes Hosmer's money. That includes everyone. The payroll in terms of the 26-man is around 160 or something.
Right.
So if AC was saying it'd be a $200 million payroll on the 26-man, that's not accurate.
Well, he never clarified it, but I mean, I can tell you that the average fan read that article and media reacted to it as the payroll for the team. Because at the time, we had a $250 million payroll coming down, right? Yeah. And it's a lot. At the time, it was like unreasonable to think they would be cutting $90 million from the payroll. If in October you had told fans that, you would be called a doomer that didn't have any facts based on it, right? And that the team always outspent what was purported.
Well, my advice would be, you know, you should always, I like Kevin Acey, I like AJ Caspel, I like Dennis Lynn. You should always just look at the facts or the hard numbers. I mean, so someone can tell you whatever they want, and if you guys just go look at those two numbers, that's going to tell you all you need to know. The Padres, from what I understand, if you look at that underneath the cap, they only have about $14 or $15 million they can spend and not to bump right up against it.
22. They got 22.
Yeah, it goes back and forth. The number is, it goes, I think I saw it's 22, but the other day it was 14 or 15. Mm,
it's definitely 22.
We'll Google it after we get off there. Yeah. We'll see where it is.
I mean, I don't know if you listen to Padres Hot Tub at all.
Sometimes I like
they
Craig
had,
Nelson.
They had Jason R.R. Martinez, who's a Padres fan. He does roster resource for Fangraphs.
Oh, good.
He actually explained the methodology on how they develop it.
Okay.
And it is like an... It's not a 100% number because they're forced to estimate things like the average across a season.
They're forced to estimate an injury
happening, right? And then you have to call up a minimum salary player to fill that position. And that all counts against the CBT. There's also like mushy player benefits that get calculated in.
Yeah, because I think in the one I saw recently that moved the number was they recalculated the benefits for Joaquin Martinez got added in. So
Spot Track, it gets cited a lot because I think it comes up first on Google, but they don't do the proper calculations. So
see, that was
Cots contracts on Baseball Prospectus and Roster Resource on Fangraphs are the more dependable sources.
That was the second bet I lost, which caused this time a mutton and chicken shortage when I had to pay off an Indian bet, was because I told Eric, I said, there's no way they're going to sign Xander Bogaerts, because that means they couldn't re-sign Soto. That means that it's going to put him way over the CBT. That means they're going to have to spend... They can't re-sign Manny, which they end up doing anyhow. So that's a really stupid move. And he goes, it's not my money, Boomer. And guess what? We can bet on that. And, you know, cause another food shortage. Yeah. So
Eric.
I should always count on Eric and Danny for just having the pulse of stupidity. So I'll give them for that. That's my fault. That's a little bit stupid move on my part, not judging him on that.
So what's your guess on wins for this year so that I can hold this against you later in the season?
Well, I think Mehdi told me when I was on his podcast that the over and under is 81.
At MGM last Monday when I was there, it was 81.5.
I think
I should have bet the under because that's a 500 or worse is like I think is a high likelihood, but...
I'm a little over. I think they can win about... I think they got a shot for second place if things go well.
All right, so how many wins?
I'd say 87 or 88.
That's a prediction? You think they're going to win 87 or 88 wins?
That's hopeful. It's a hopeful optimism from someone who just reads the papers and follows stuff just like you do. I don't pretend to know it on the major leagues, have any type of insider information. So, I mean, I think that's why we have no problems getting credentials. Because when we go in there, we're interviewing. We would, like, put it this way. If we were in the Major League locker room, if I go there when they play D.C., which I usually do, I'm going to go interview Jackson Merrill or someone who just came up. I'm not going to go bother Manny Machado. You know, the thing is, we can't really add any value to the Major League team because, you know, we don't have the money to do that. I mean, we can't compete. You know, if I won $1 billion, you know, a lottery thing, and they said make Mad Friars cover the major leagues, and I could pay David and Kevin and Ben and Mark, and we could travel with the team, yeah, maybe we'd do something there. But you can't, I mean, if you're trying to compete with those guys, you're just not going to win. I mean, we kind of have the space all to ourselves in the minor leagues. I think what's kind of weird is we're the only guys who really travel. I mean, Jeff Sanders doesn't really go out to the affiliates. I mean,
no,
we're the only ones who do. So that's kind of where I like to stay. So I'm going to be optimistic. I think they're going to be better than 500. I mean, they just got a lot of guys who make big paychecks. But we'll see. You can hold it to me.
All right. I'm going to mark that down.
You should.
Well, John, I feel like we've said it all here.
You got to go back and ask Mark about his unnatural fear of tall redheads.
Okay. I'll tell him.
Yeah.
Is he the one with the fear, or do they have fear of him when he disrobes?
No, I think it's just all on Mark. I think it's just some unnatural, weird thing that he just is. I think it's maybe seeing a guy that's about his height, because Kaz is a big dude. Kaz is about 6'6" or 6'7". Mark's around 6'8". So maybe it's just seeing someone that tall and that enthusiastic, because Mark's kind of a subdued guy. Yeah, I think it's strange.
I'm going to tell you, you've got a star on your hands with that Mark Wilkins. When you get a call from Darren or whoever for a radio spot, like, Mark should be front and center for you guys.
We kind of divide them up. We kind of have this, like, wall where, like, David J. and I are on with Darren and John and Jim, and Kevin, Ben, and Mark are on with Ben Woods and Craig. And I think Craig and Annie now have been on there, and Mark kind of hops around when he can figure out some, like, little bit of snark on the minor leagues he wants to add to the Ben and Wood show. I'm sure he's always their first choice.
Oh, he did ask me to check in on someone that was selected for the Mad Friars top 20.
Who's that?
Noel Varies. How's he doing? Is he good?
Noel Vela.
Yeah. Is he good? He's on their top 20.
He was some guy who... Noel Vela was a guy who was last year, was in our top 20, then got injured, never came back. He was in... from, like, South Texas, and he actually retired.
Retired.
Some guy gave us a bunch of crap going, what do these guys know? They put Noel Vela in that.
Hey, was this your boomer? Who was the guy? Boomer, his second baseman. He made the EVT top 100.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's not Boomer Wells. It's Boomer.
No, Boomer something or other.
Totally sucked and washed out of baseball.
The worst one I ever had.
But even after he retired from baseball, he still made the next top 100.
Yeah, James put him in there. Well, the worst one I ever screwed up on is I went on 1090 one time, and they told me for a pregame, they wanted me to just do this preseason thing real quick on all four levels. I had like 3 minutes to do it, hit the different guys, and one of the guys was Jed Jerko at the time. So I go right there, you'd get a kick out of this. I go in, Jed Jerkoff is probably going to be one of the top guys. And this is what kills me is they taped it. So I call him up, the station. This is like 2 hours before the game. I said, hey, we got to redo this. This is what I said. Ah, you're fine, man. Nothing wrong.
How'd that go over?
No one noticed, which I think says more than anything else. Jed Jerkoff. Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, so that's all right.
All right, John, that's all I got. I'm spent on prospects. I'd like to not think about prospects again.
I was shocked I got the invite, man, from the notoriously anti-prospect
I don't think we announced
podcast.
That we're dining at my beloved Nando's Peri-Peri.
Yes,
so
yes.
When I'm in the area, I always make sure to eat here. This is my third time dining here since Sunday. So.
I went to the second hottest, man, not the top one like you did. So I'm a little bit of a pansy on that.
Well, I appreciate you coming on, driving over here, or taking the metro over here. And I'm sure we'll have you on again to talk about lame, boring prospects that are never going to pan out or develop power. It'll be a fun time for everyone.
Well, I think you had many more questions from my colleague, and maybe he'll actually get to show you about some of the questions you were asking. That'd be kind of a fun thing.
That would
thing.
Be fun. Yeah, I think that would be interesting for our viewers, especially, well, not even just our, I'm not going to make judgments. You know, any of your viewers could be interested in his.
They might, yeah. Get a camera. I'm sure Corey will be up for it. Corey's a good dude.
Well, that's going to need to be wide angle. I mean, let me tell you, panoramic.
I'll trust you on that more than me, man. All right. Thanks again for having me on.
All right. Go Padres.